She was at the top of the seesaw, and I guess whoever was on the bottom got off. She came down, she hit her head, but she went through the day, she was okay. But later that afternoon, she had a seizure.
And I noticed immediately that the right side of her face was drooping and she was talking out of the left side.
That's Brian and Kathy Usher. They're talking about their daughter, Beth.
She had a very rare neurological encephalitis.
Every minute or so, she would have like either these jerks, they'd throw her to the ground, off a chair, a fork would go flying, whatever was in her hand.
It was, you know, not a good time.
The day we left Johns Hopkins, their last words to us, it was, go home and enjoy life, and let's hope she has 10 good years. And then that was in 1987, and Beth just turned 40.
Thanks, Mom. And Kathy just told.
Keep that off the podcast, right, Beth?
I'm Carvel Wallace, and this is Finding Fred, a podcast about Fred Rogers from iHeartMedia and Fatherly in partnership with Transmitter Media. Today, just one story.
I really wish I could remember. I was so young at the time.
About Fred Rogers and a kid named Beth.
I only remember through stories that Mom and Dad told me.
It slowly built up to where she was having over 100 seizures a day, some so severe they would knock her down and she would be flailing and we were worried she couldn't breathe. And I would go into grocery stores or church or whatever, and people would look at me and look at her because she was black and blue from head to toe from falling. We were watching this deterioration happen. And every time we went to the doctor, they had no idea what was going on. It was so crazy that we even tore apart her bedroom thinking maybe she was bit by a spider. Maybe there was a spider in her room. You know, we were constantly calling all over the place to try to learn of new drugs, new studies being done.
Didn't you borrow a doctor's jacket and go into the library?
I even borrowed a doctor's lab coat and broke into Yale University's medical library because they weren't allowing anybody in there. We felt like we were on Twilight Zone because here something is obviously eating away at our child's brain. We're watching it happen. You think like you have an ill child and the world should come together and make this child better, but no one had any idea what was going on. We tried just about everything, and in order for us to get ready for work in the morning, we had to plop Beth up with a bunch of pillows in front of the television set. And we instructed her older brother, he's older by 2.5 years, to sit with her with his arms around her. And they were surrounded by pillows watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And he called, he said, Mom, and I came running immediately. And he said, Mr. Rogers is over with and Beth didn't have a seizure. And then the next day, the same thing happened. And the next day after that, I said, this is very peculiar. So then I sat down with her and I just looked at her and her eyes were just, she was inside that television screen. And it was like that he was talking directly to her. Even so that when he would ask a question, like, shall we feed the fish today? Beth would say, yes, we should. And at the end of every episode, he would say, I love you just the way you are. And Beth would say, I love you too, Mr. Rogers. And she would not have one seizure.
After 2.5 years of research, constant seizures, and makeshift treatments, Beth and her parents finally got a diagnosis: Rasmussen's encephalitis. It's an extremely rare and progressive disease that attacks the brain.
The only treatment is, at that time, was to remove the entire left side of her brain.
You just can't fathom that type of surgery, and I couldn't imagine doing that.
No.
We left there and said, no, we're not doing that. And
we even consulted a neurosurgeon at Yale who said that they would not even put a dog through that.
And then Bethy kept getting worse, and I mean, it impacted her whole life. I mean, her learning, her friendships, it was a nightmare.
We were all petrified. We didn't go anywhere. We shut down as a family. We were afraid to leave her anywhere. We didn't, one of us was with her all the time, round the clock.
Yeah. Finally, I think what pushed us over the edge, it was a holiday show, and Bethy had prepared for it and singing a song with her classmates. I think you were in, what, first grade at the time?
And it was O Tannenbaum.
Yeah. O Tannenbaum.
Tannenbaum, you remember that?
Yeah.
And so the night of the show, we were there, and she has a seizure right in the middle.
A full-blown, you know, so grandma.
We had to help her
horrific
off.
Horrific seizure. And she looked at us and said, I ruined the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she said, these seizures, I just want them to go away.
So they decided to go ahead with the brain surgery, known as a hemispherectomy. And they scheduled it for the following February. That gave them 2 months at home with Beth before the surgery.
We knew that there was a possibility that Beth could fall into a coma. She could be paralyzed for life, and she could even die from this surgery. We wanted to make the time before her surgery spectacular.
So Kathy found the number for Fred Rogers' TV station and explained to his assistant that her daughter was going in for a horrendous surgery. Kathy asked for an autographed photo of Mr. Rogers to tape up in the hospital room.
And she said, I will, you know, talk to Fred and get back to you. And maybe an hour later, I got a call, and she said, Fred is going to call Beth at 7 o'clock this evening. Is that good for you? And I said, he's going to call her? The phone rang and I picked it up. And I said to Beth, Beth, a friend is calling for you. And at this point, Beth had no friends. So thinking that a friend was on the line was really unbelievable. And she ran over and I gave her the phone and she squealed, Mr. Rogers, Mommy, Dad, it's Mr. Rogers. Brian and I left the room. We were peeking over around the corner because we wanted her to have this real, genuine conversation with him. It was over an hour she was talking to each and every character on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And all of a sudden, we heard her say, I'm afraid I'm going to die and leave my brother and my parents. And then we heard her say, really, Mr. Rogers? Really, King Friday? And she hung up the phone saying, I love you too, Mr. Rogers. Thank you so much. I love you, King Friday. I love you, Elaine, Lady Elaine Fairchild. And I love you, Daniel Strike Tiger. Thank you for calling me. And I am going to be okay. And she hung up the phone and we were in a puddle. We just couldn't believe it.
That February, the family made the trip to Johns Hopkins for the surgery. The operation was long, about 12 hours, and at first, things for Beth looked good.
the surgery went well, and then later that night, she fell into a deep coma. We were killing ourselves. Like, what did we do? You know, at that point, we thought for sure we made the wrong decision. We were begging, praying to God, please just let her wake up from this. If she can't walk or talk, we don't care. Just let her come out of it. And we did not leave her side. We were in the intensive care the entire time.
Brian and Kathy sat at Beth's bedside night after night for weeks. And one source of constant comfort was the music of Mr. Rogers.
Before her surgery, after he spoke to her on the phone, he sent her a huge box of tapes, cassette tapes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And we had this little tiny Fisher-Price battery-operated tape player. And all around the clock, we would play songs. Yeah. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
You can't go down the drain.
You'll never go down the drain. And we would play them over and over when she was in a coma.
That's right. Yeah.
One of my vivid memories is going into the intensive care unit, and she was strapped up to everything imaginable, all kinds of IVs, and her head was swollen like three times the size. Her eyes were so swollen shut, and you could hear the beep, beep, beep of the heart monitor and the dripping of all the IVs. And in the background, you hear, "There are many ways to say I love you." Mr. Rogers in the background, the music that was constantly going on in the room.
Many ways, many ways. Many ways to say.
More from the Ushers in just a minute.
I love you.
After her brain surgery, Beth Usher fell into a deep coma. Her parents, Kathy and Brian, kept Mr. Rogers' music playing in her room.
One night, a nurse came into Beth's room and said, "Kathy, there's a man with a voice sounding like Mr. Rogers claiming he is Fred Rogers and he'd like to speak with you." And I went to the desk and I picked it up and he said, "Kathy, this is Fred. And I'm getting concerned. I wanted to find out how Beth was." And I said, "Thank you so much for calling. But unfortunately, there were major complications and Beth has been in a coma now for a couple of weeks." And he said, "I'd like to come. I won't stay long, I promise." And so we said, okay. So a couple of days later, in he walked with a clarinet case. He placed it on Beth's bed, and he opened it slowly and took out King Friday, Lady Elaine Fairchild, Daniel Striped Tiger, and Meow Meow Pussycat. And Beth had her own neighborhood show.
I just remember he was so genuinely concerned about Beth. He insisted we take pictures with the puppets, and Bethy's got her feeding tube and she's hooked up to machines. And
I think what touched me the most was when he sang, "I love you just the way you are."
Yeah.
It was my dad, your mom, a few of my sisters, and we were just outside the door of the room. And I remember hearing that outside the door. And I looked around at everybody, and even my dad had tears streaming down their faces. And I remember just thinking, what am I seeing here? This is incredible. And I honestly believed Beth was going to wake up That's how magical it was. And when she didn't...
I'm sorry, Mom.
You know. But I remember afterwards, we held hands around her bed and we prayed. And that really gave us so much comfort. I just remember feeling as though things are going to be okay.
Don't worry, it has a happy ending.
Beth Usher finally came out of her coma about 3 weeks later.
Mr. Rogers left all of his puppets around my bed so I wouldn't wake up and be alone. So I knew he came somehow.
The surgery, it left her hemiplegic, paralyzed on the right side, but it also took away her right field of vision in both eyes and speaking.
And speaking.
Because half of her tongue is paralyzed.
I talk it goodly now.
But her hearing is perfect. So it's, you know.
Beth and Mr. Rogers corresponded throughout the years. He wrote many, many letters and even called Beth.
And were you on my birthday?
On her birthday. Kathy and I both worked at the University of Connecticut.
Mom was put in charge of finding someone for the commencement speaker. And so I suggested, why not get Mr. Rogers? And my mom and my dad were both nervous that college kids aren't going to listen to Mr. Rogers. And I said, no, I think they'll listen. So I went ahead, I wrote him a letter. He got right back to me and said he would be delighted to, under one circumstance, if I help him write his commencement address. I was only 12 years old at the time.
So Mr. Rogers came.
And Brian and I have been involved and attended a lot of graduation ceremonies, and we could never quite hear the commencement address. The champagne corks going off, the balloons and balls that are being bounced around. In this ceremony, you could hear a pin drop.
Yep.
And during the address, he pointed to Beth in the audience, and he said, these words were provided to me by my good friend Beth Usher. And what was the main point of your advice to him when you wrote back to him?
Do small kind deeds for other people, then they'll do small kind deeds for other people, and maybe we'll start a chain reaction.
And he also did the take a moment to think about someone who helped you
along the way.
Along the way.
Fred Rogers did this often in speeches, asked crowds to sit quietly and reflect on the people they love and the people who love them, like in this commencement address at Dartmouth College.
I'd like to give you all an invisible gift, a gift of a silent minute to think about those who have helped you become who you are today. Wherever they are, if they've loved you and encouraged you and wanted what was best in life for you, they're right inside yourself. And I feel that you deserve quiet time on this special occasion to devote some thought to them. So let's just take a minute in honor of those who have cared about us all along the way. One silent minute.
I have goosebumps now when you look around at the audiences and students and parents. You just see them like these big, burly football, basketball athletes with tears streaming down their eyes when they were asked to think about somebody who really helped them along the way.
Whomever you've been thinking about, imagine how grateful they must be that during your silent times, you remember how important they are to you.
At the end of the speech that Mr. Rogers gave, the president of UConn gave Mr. Rogers a present, and it was this engraved jewelry box, and he hands it to my brother Brian and said, "Keep it until we meet again."
He was so aware that Beth's brother was kind of in the background and everybody was paying so much attention to Beth.
As they should.
He made a point of asking him about his life, about what he enjoyed doing. And Mr. Rogers paying attention to him really was huge. Yeah. And he knew that. One day I came home from work. I was making dinner. I remember it profoundly. I was trying to make spaghetti and meatballs, and I was rushing around multitasking, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and he said, "Kathy, is this a good time to talk? This is Fred." And I went, "Oh, no, Fred, this is perfect. How are you?" He said, "I just have a quick question. Beth and Brian seem to have such great self-esteem, and I just want to know what your philosophy is and how you go about raising your children to have such great self-esteem." And I'm going on and on, and in the meantime, Brian comes home from work, and he's kind of listening to my side of the conversation. And I said, "Okay, Fred, oh, love to you and Joanne." And I hung up the phone. And Brian said to me, "Who are you talking to?" And I said, "Mr. Rogers." And he said, "You were telling Mr. Rogers about children and self-esteem?" Like, and afterward I went, "Oh my goodness, what did I say? I'm telling the guru of children." But that was how he was. He didn't feel he had all the answers. He was asking everybody else.
Fred was always learning, always curious, always listening, and he was always there. I mean, there are so many stories about Fred showing up in surprising places, about his kindness to people that he didn't even know. Kindness and presence were what Fred believed in, maybe because that's what God was for him, what goodness really meant, love and availability. So that's what he did, as much as he could, in person and through his show. Next time.
Fred didn't call Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood a show, and he didn't call it a program. What he called it was a television visit. Hmm. Think of what a visit is. Hmm. A visit is you and me together. He was talking with us, not to us.
Finding Fred is produced by Transmitter Media. This episode was produced by Jordan Bailey. Our editor is Sarah Nix. Special thanks to Michael Garofalo. The executive producer for Transmitter Media is Greta Cohn. Executive producers at Fatherly are Simon Isaacs and Andrew Berman. Thanks to the team at iHeartMedia. And thanks also to Beth, Brian, and Kathy Usher. Our show is mixed by Rick Kwan, music by Blue Dot Sessions and Allison Leighton Brown. I'm Carvel Wallace. Thank you for listening.